Hi, I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. A majority of Alaskans support a large increase to state education funding, according to a new poll from the progressive group Data for Progress. In a sample of more than 1,100 Alaskans, 52% said they favored a large increase to the base student allocation. That's the amount of money per student that the state gives to school districts. Nearly 40% of respondents support little to no increase. The poll drills deeper to look at how much of an increase Alaskans support. Half favor a per-student increase of $680 or more. That's the increase the House and Senate passed in recent weeks with broad bipartisan support. Jason Katz-Brown is a senior advisor with Data for Progress.
$680 is a popular amount, although many people want it more. And then we see consistently in our results that Nemetsu is the only constituency that wants a smaller increase than that.
The group produced its poll results at a pivotal time. Governor Mike Dunleavy is threatening to veto the education bill unless lawmakers pass additional legislation adding new retention bonuses for teachers and other priorities. He has until March 14th to sign or veto the bill. The survey touches on other issues in front of the Alaska legislature. Katz-Brown says two-thirds of respondents support a House bill that would expand the subsidies and offer new tax credits to support childcare.
I say overall, I really thought that Alaska's legislature's bipartisan, like consensus-building nature shown through in these results.
The poll also asked about the 2024 presidential election. It shows Donald Trump is ahead by 12 points in the state, and more than 60% of respondents disapprove of Joe Biden's performance as president. And by a roughly 2-to-1 margin, they don't want to see the grocery store giants Albertsons and Kroger merge. About two-thirds of respondents support a federal ban on trawl fishing off Alaska's coast. The poll was conducted in late February and early March and has a 3-point margin of error. And now for this week's episode of Curious Juno.
Anywhere you go in Juno, there are mountains shooting up all around. Mount Juno and Mount Roberts loom over downtown. On Douglas, Mount Bradley, better known as Mount Jumbo, notoriously blocks South Douglas from getting much sun. And in the valley, there's Thunder Mountain, supposedly named for avalanches rumbling down its slopes. A listener asked KTOO what the mountain's original Tlingit names are. For this installment of Curious Juno, I spoke with Tlingit educators to find out. Like most of Juno, Kristen Rankin likes to hike. On some of those hikes, she started wondering what some of her favorite peaks were called before they were named after settlers.
I love to be up on all of the mountains around us, and I think it's really important to know those names, and I want to feel connected with the land and the history.
When she was thinking about that history, she couldn't help but see how names like Mount Juno have only been around for a short time.
Okay, so we have these names that have been in existence for places for, 150 years tops? And then there have been names that have, for places that these names have been around for thousands of years.
University of Alaska Southeast Tlingit language professor Hune Lance Twitchell says, from a Tlingit perspective, the newer names don't make much sense.
Imagine if your grandmother was 98 years old and her name was Nora. And I met her, and I start calling her Sally. And then you say, hey, my grandma's name is actually Nora. And if my response is, I've been calling her Sally for like a week now. And if that's my response to just keep calling her by a different name, then it sounds kind of silly. But from a colonial perspective, people say, it's been called that for like 100 years. And so 100 years compared to 18,000 is not a very significant amount of time.
Twitchell says there are much older names for these mountains. Let's take a tour, starting with Mount Roberts.
Starting a little bit towards Thane, there's a place called Wushkinadeyi. And Wushkinadeyi is trails that are going up together.
Next, Mount Juno.
Coming over this way, you have Yada'atkase. And Yada'atkase, if you're standing kind of right outside these studios and looking up towards the mountains that are just kind of to the left of downtown, that's Yada'atkase.
You might recognize Yada'atkase as the name of the high school, which makes sense since it faces the school. That name means beautifully adorned face. And that's just the face of Mount Juno. The top has a different name.
Then if you look up from the high school, there's a mountain with a bit of a rounded top, and that is Shatlach. And Shatlach is a moldy head.
And in the Mendenhall Valley is Thunder Mountain, or...
And Tlachsetungen is the one in between Costco and the valley over there. And so Tlachsetungen is hands at rest.
As for the peak on Douglas Island, Mount Bradley or Mount Jumbo?
If you were standing here downtown and you look across, then there's a mountain on the other side on the big island over there. And it's called Sayek.
Sayek means spirit helper. It's also a part of the name for the elementary school in Douglas.
As we sort of use these names more, we shouldn't be afraid of making mistakes. And so some people are going to say Sayek as opposed to Sayek. And that's not a big deal.
He says with gentle corrections, the right pronunciations will come with time. If you want to learn, there are classes you can take. Nila Toga Anna Clock is a local Tlingit language teacher. She's Koyukon Athabascan and Iyak, so she learned the language as a visitor on Tlingit land.
Indigenous place names often describe the landscape or how to survive on it, how it can be useful to you, what to watch out for there. Whereas colonial place names are often named after a person of power or wealth in a faraway land because settlers wanted to honor that person if they funded their trip or whatever.
Clock says the Tlingit language community is full of resources that can help people living in Juno learn more about the land through the language. She sees it as a vital part of getting to know this place.
Having traditional stories to read and listen to, and then having the language community was a big part for me of understanding and feeling like I belong there, even though I'm not of Tlingit heritage. But I belonged there as a student.
One of Clock's mentors, Marie Olson, an Akwan elder, gave Clock some advice that informed how she thinks of her language journey and her role in the world around her.
And one of the things she told me was, you should always be working to learn to be an indigenous person of the world.
Twitchell says that for most of these place names, it's not a matter of changing a name to a Tlingit one, but changing it back to what it was called before settlers came.
So when we look at place name restoration, we're not looking at changing things so much as to saying it never should have changed in the first place. We were here, we belong, the land belongs to us, we belong to the land, and this relationship is not something that anyone had a right to remove.
Twitchell said language learners are scrambling to record as many place names as possible. It's a race against time because the number of elders who hold that knowledge dwindle each year. There are just 7 master speakers now. But he says there's room for new place names too.
It's a living language, and we can make new names as new things emerge or as we find places where we say, we couldn't document those names in time, but we can make some names based on the knowledge that we have of this area.
He believes in a future where everyone living here won't think twice about saying they're going for a hike up Wushkinak Deye or that their kid goes to school at Kakdeguwuhin. In Zontek Ahine, I'm Yvonne Crumery.
For more Curious Juno stories or to submit your own questions, go to ktoo.org/curious. Leading Alaska legislators said on Tuesday that there's little appetite for spending from savings to pay for a supersized permanent fund dividend this year, likely killing a proposal from Governor Mike Dunleavy, the Alaskan Beacon reports. In December, the governor proposed spending about $2.3 billion on a dividend of roughly $3,500 per recipient under a formula in state law. That would result in a $1 billion deficit and require spending from the state's constitutional budget reserve. But as a draft budget takes shape in the House, top members of both the House and Senate say they're unlikely to spend from the reserve this year. When the budget leaves the House, Palmer Republican Delana Johnson says she expects the dividend to be whatever can be afforded under a balanced budget. Senator Bruce Stedman, a Republican from Sitka and co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee, said that a, quote, 25% dividend could fit within a balanced budget alongside the legislature's just passed education funding increase, though there wouldn't be a lot of excess room, he said. The 25% dividend would be worth about $1,360 per recipient and cost about $914 million, according to estimates published by the Legislative Finance Division last week. In Juneau, you're listening to KTOO. Thank you so much for listening.